You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. I actually love this song. It's OAR. It's called This Town. But it was, I watched the College World Series with my son Patrick, and it was awesome. Yeah. And the song was kind of the bumper music that ESPN used. Kind of, they made a video walking through Omaha where the College World Series is, and they're playing this song, This Town, blah, 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 blah. And so I'm a fan.
So it makes you feel good inside?
Yeah, it makes you, I have a warm feeling associated.
Okay, we don't. I get a warm feeling.
Okay, now let's. Mike Musselman joins us, the Gunner, here on Monday edition of All Marine Radio, here on the All Warrior Radio Network. Now we got to talk about the Super Bowl, man. Come on.
Yeah.
I know you're a New England hater, yes? Or are you?
No, I'm not.
But you were against, I mean, you were against New England.
I was, because I don't like cheaters. You don't have to cheat in the sport of football.
To win.
And, you know, Tom Brady cheated. And I like the guy. I think he's a fantastic athlete. I think he's very talented. He's a great icon of football. But he cheated, man. I mean...
Yeah.
It's like, come on.
And he
smashed. You're Tom Brady, for Christ's sake.
And he smashed his phone.
Yeah.
To cover it up. I think he just should have said, yeah. I mean, everybody does.
You know what? Yeah.
I did it.
I got weak. I did make a mistake. You know what? I apologize.
Weak? No, it was just something that I've done. You know, and so I apologize. Everybody does it, though. So if you're gonna get, I didn't invent that trick. You know,
right.
I'm not going to throw anybody else under the bus, Drew Bledsoe. But I learned it from professionals about going to the equipment guys and asking them to before they handed, you know, on a cold day, before they or any day, you know, letting about a half a pound of air out of a football and to see if the referees would notice. And if the referees didn't notice, then we're playing with our footballs, and that's cool. But if they did notice, then, we, you know, he'd say, oh,
yeah,
sorry, my bad, let me go fix it.
Yeah.
That's the way it goes. I wish you would have said that. I agree with you. But, you know, they have a history of,
the calls, right. I mean, a lot of things.
The whole spy thing when they were videotaping signals, stuff like that. But they weren't the only ones doing it. I know. So, anyway.
But they're the ones that got caught.
They did get caught. But I will tell you this. Bill Belichick, they were calling him the greatest coach ever in the National Football League last night.
Well, does 17 years, 5 or 9 Super Bowl appearances, how many wins? 7?
No, 5.
5?
7 appearances, 5 wins. 5-2.
Oh. I mean, does that automatically qualify you for greatness?
Yes.
I don't know, man. You don't hear a lot of him. He's a quiet leader. I mean, I use that term. I don't know much about him. He's on a winning team. I mean, the team, you know, anything, you could say that for anything. The team manager, the gear manager for the, is the greatest in the NFL for the Patriots. Why? Well, he's been in the Super Bowl, you know, 5 times. You know, the water boy, the greatest water boy in all of the NFL, plays for, just because they got, no, there's a lot to that. And I don't know if that qualifies him just for the simple fact that he's got those wins under his belt.
Yeah, that's what it is. It's the wins. It's the wins. But let me tell you, I mean, in terms of theater, how incredible was that to watch? And Mike, we're texting, right? There's about, what?
Yeah, that was a great game.
You could tell Mike and I were like, uh-oh, God has changed sides in the middle of this thing.
Oh, yeah. Atlanta did something in the locker room that didn't appease somebody. And Oh my goodness, it was over with.
They got it laid to them, and again, it's just when you. I'm sure they thought they were going to win. I mean, Deion Sanders after the game was talking about. We were talking about. I was tweeting, who's going to play in the concert in Atlanta at the victory party? He said that's how sure I was. Look, this is not an also ran football team. When you get to the Super Bowl, nobody gives up a 28-3 at the half. Nobody gives up a 25-point lead.
No, 28. They scored 34 unanswered points.
So it was, I thought it was at the half, 28-3.
Yeah, you're right.
He said nobody gives up that lead in the Super Bowl. No Super Bowl defense is that poor.
That bad.
And he said, look, man, Tom Brady is like, he's the man. There's nothing else you can say other than that guy knows how to get it done. And when it turned, and you're watching, who's that dude with the beard? Danny Amendola? Him? Number 11?
Amendola's a player.
Yeah. That guy, when he starts running around the field, and then when he made the catch off the leg.
That's going to go down in history as the Franco Harris immaculate reception.
Right. And then the one the giant guy made on his helmet when he kind of went to the guy that one, behind his head.
The one that, Eli threw. Yeah, those are the three catches. The immaculate reception, that catch, Amendola's catch, and Eli's throw to the end zone. Those are those things that, man, come on. That's divine intervention.
God's now decided he's taking a side.
Hundreds of things had to happen in perfect alignment for that to happen. I mean, it's absolutely amazing to me.
Do you think God? Do you think God takes a side?
I don't know. I mean, you could make an argument. Last night game, I don't know what was said in the locker room, but someone wasn't too happy. Let me also. I don't know if you noticed this, but you know me. I notice a lot of things that people don't notice.
You do.
I noticed the difference in the language, though. So. There was a little bit of, I was watching back and forth, and I was watching some internet stuff, and I was watching a lot of different looks, and there's a difference in the language when they're talking to the players before the game, everything. There's an air of confidence when you had some of the guys from, like the Brady and from the Patriots. And more importantly, what was really kind of expressed, Mac, is the language of losers over the language of winners. Language of losers are if and but or, should have, could have, would have. That's the language of losers. So when you hear that being said in pregame and everything else, it kind of, I don't know. At first I kind of said that, holy crap, man. This is either going to be the most incredible comeback in all of NFL history, because Brady is that guy.
Yeah.
Brady is not a loser.
No.
Brady practices the language of winning, and he shows it on the field every day. But you could see the difference. Look at some of the interviews before with Atlanta, before the game, some of the halftime stuff, and you start getting the hint of the language of losers. They had a doubt. And I think what happened was they went into the halftime and they were like, no one had the conversation. No one said, all right, guys, this game can still be lost. Don't go out there and F this up.
I think they did, Mike. But no. Look, you can say it, but in your head, we're up 28-3 at the half. We haven't been up 28-3 all year.
No one's been 28-3.
Our defense is all over these guys. They're making Tom Brady move a little bit. Our defensive backs are running with these guys. They don't have shit.
Yeah.
Boys, this is ours. And you know that this is the problem. What happens is now we're going to win. Well, all of a sudden it flips over on you, right? The vehicle flips and you're upside down. Well, now you got to go back into fight mode.
And it's too late.
It's too late.
You're reacting. Yeah, you're reacting to everything.
You're reacting. And let me tell you, the worst part is the beast on the other side has been unleashed, and it's coming for your throat. Because now they can smell it.
To think like this, you know, to think that, was there a possibility that the defensive coordinator or the offensive coordinator for the New England Patriots was so intelligent that he knew that Atlanta's defense was going to be just explosive and there was nothing we could do. We were just going to take the hits, take the hits, take the hits, and then wear them out just by letting them punch us. And then, because they did, you saw Atlanta was all over the place. They touched Brady more times in the first half than, you know, four or five games combined. They put Brady down. He had interceptions, what, four interceptions or four miscues that resulted in either interceptions or just critical play loss.
Right.
I mean, all of that stuff.
And then the one pick six that went for a touchdown in the first half.
Yeah. To go in and say, you know what, we're going to get hit. Let's take the hits. And we're just going to, by virtual, because we have the endurance and the stamina to last through these hits. And no matter what the lead is, we're going to win. Because in the second half, the Atlanta Falcon defense was out of gas.
You know what, but let me ask you about that. The offense is playing just as many plays. Why is one side out of gas and the other one like, yeah, well, they both play the same number of plays.
Nope. But not enough time. So when Brady was on the field, he lasted longer on the field. His offense was on the field longer, which kept the Atlanta Falcons defense out longer. If you look at the plays, Atlanta had fewer plays. Their offense wasn't out as much. It was out, quick, bam, 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 touchdown. Or out in three and gone. But Brady made those plays long, made the drives last longer, thus wearing out the defense. I would say...
I don't understand that,
result.
Because the offense is playing... Hey, the offense is playing the same number of plays as the defense. Why is the defense worn out and the offense is good to go?
It's easier... Cause
thank you.
It's easier to defend than it is... Think about it.
It is easier to defend than to play offense.
How much more energy do you waste in attacking or defending? Attacking.
Yeah, attacking.
Anything you do. Attacking results in more energy being wasted than defending. So as offense, the offensive line is not attacking.
Yes,
defending.
It is. They attack every play. They get off the ball and
they're
blocking.
They know the play that they're going to be run. All they got to do is stand and prevent that guy from getting through. The defensive player is actually on the offense. He wants to stop the play.
I just don't. That doesn't make sense to me. And look, I understand. Like if it's a pass play, I'm coming. But if it's a run play, you know, I'm teeing off and I'm the attacker if I'm an offensive lineman. So, but in either case, you're both expending energy. You're both out there for the same number of plays. It just sounds to me weird. But they're tired and we're not. You know, it doesn't make sense to me. What did you think? What did you think was the best part of
the pivotal play?
Yeah, or the best part of the thing that interested you the most
was how Ryan made the mistake and took the sack instead of throwing the ball away. That's the difference between Ryan and Brady. So. We always say, in everything I do, when I teach things, when I teach handguns or I teach weapons or anything, and I always say, what makes Brady a better quarterback than, let's say, Ryan? What makes him? I mean, they're both stellar athletes. They can both throw the ball. They both can read the defensive line. But it's touches on the ball. Brady has touched the ball more times than Ryan. He has the experience.
But I will say this. He's a head in the game. And let me just tell you this. I'll relate this to combat. You can have experience, but if your head isn't in the game relative to those experiences, doesn't mean shit.
I disagree.
Doesn't mean shit. To me, what Brady has is not just the experience. but his head is in that stuff all the time.
But Matt, that's my point. My point is, if you have experience, your head is always in the game because you have the experience.
No. Mike, look, you and I both know guys that have experiences, and they have experiences, yes? Head in the game?
No, experience is not just time in. Man, I've been a Marine 19 years.
Right.
Oh, that guy has a lot of experience. No.
It's paying attention. No. It's paying attention experience, right?
Right.
Yeah, and that's to me what Tom Brady does. And let me just tell you, I heard Wayne Gretzky talking about this. They lost the Stanley Cup. Tell me if you've heard this, but they lost the Stanley Cup. The Edmonton Oilers did. They lost the Stanley Cup to the New York Islanders, and in New York on Long Island. And Nassau County Coliseum. They lose it in, I want to say, seven games or six games or something like that. So Gretzky and Messier, or Gretzky and Paul Coffey, are walking out to get on their bus, to get on a plane, to go back to Edmonton. And he says, as they're going by, they have to walk by the Islanders' locker room. And this is the Islanders that were prolific, right? Dennis Potvin, Mike Bossy, Brian Trottier. I mean, they were a big-time hockey team. He said, you know, they went in there and they expect everybody to be hooping and hollering. He said they walk in and it's like all the players have ice on them, right? And they're sitting down and they're having a beer and they're laughing and talking. It was kind of the staff and the family members that were making all the noise. And they walked out of there and they looked at each other and they said, you know what? We're fine. The difference is they sold out. They knew the price they had to pay. They sold out and we didn't. They left it. They left everything out there. And so to me, greatness comes from, smart guys with their head in the game, and they take that experience they get and they make it into something, that they see.
Learned experience.
Exactly. Yeah. This seasoned, high definition experience. And I'll tell you what, did you see the balls Brady threw in the second half when it's almost like he figured it out? It's like,
oh, yeah.
He figured it out, and and it was just incredible. I mean, it's like he's an expert warfighter, and what you saw, in my opinion, what you saw, and I think you're absolutely right, Matt Ryan, he's not there yet.
No.
He's good, but if he's going to get there, those one or two plays a game are the difference. Those one or two plays. And I'll tell you what, arguably, him taking that sack and then they get the holding call puts them out of field goal range, right? You know, you could probably
The sack put them out permanently. That was the pivotal play. When he got sacked, they had lost the game. That was the switch. And the difference is Brady was smart enough to see that the momentum had shifted at that critical point, and he took advantage of it. He took advantage of it.
Wow.
And, you know, it was interesting. If you're watching that, and I was listening to, I was talking to my buddies that are big-time Patriots fans, and they live in New England, the States. They live in that area.
Nine.
Yeah, and they were like, man, holy smokes, we had given up at one point. We had given up, and I said, why? You know, you never give up on a guy like Brady. You never, his experience, what he can do, how he can read and do all that stuff, is so pivotal in the game of football. But you never, ever give up on that guy, because he never quit.
But, you know, but again, he's, I think everybody in the country, right, thought that thing was over at halftime. I didn't think it was over. I didn't think it was over, but I started doing some work and, you know, putting around. I'd stick my head and I'd look at the game. Then when it got close, I was like, I was like, wow. And then I sat down and I started watching. I'm like, they're going to win. You can feel it. You can feel, you can feel the shift.
Yep.
You could feel the shift and just in the tempo and whatnot. But I agree. And Mike, I'll draw a parallel. You tell a story about, you know, getting in a firefight in Afghanistan and looking at a kid and saying, what are you shooting at? And he says, And you say, no, what are you shooting at? And I'm sure that he left that thinking, yeah, in the middle of a firefight, I'm like rocking, and the gunner looks at me and says, what are you shooting at? And I didn't know. I was just shooting, you know, at like where I saw tracers going. And he, you know, he kind of pulled me like, hey, don't do that. You know, shoot at a target.
Well, cause it's, yeah, that's out of fear, really.
Right. But it's that head in the game, expert experience over the course of years that brings that ability to operate in that environment that slows it down and make you, you know, and some guys can, you know, some guys can pretty much do it. Brady's gifted. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
He's gifted in, like Joe Montana was gifted. You know, I just, as a 49er fan, I used to love the way he would come out of the huddle, lick his fingers, and just his eyes would go left and right. And you're looking at it going, like, it's done. He's too good. And he would find it all the time. And but I'll tell you what, it's incredible to watch on a stage like that. You know, it's almost like it's our national theater, you know, and it turned out, you know, so incredible. And then the other, you know, the other part I thought was very cool was he, you know, I mean, the commissioner shook his hand on the stage and, you know, those guys, you know, Brady fought desperately not to be suspended. And there was, no secret about, there was no, you know, loss of affection between those two, but he acted like an absolute class act. His mother has cancer and has been battling that for about 18 months. And, you know, he's gone through all this stuff and he acts like he acted like a gentleman. And, I mean, he wrote a huge page in Tom Brady history last night, but it was really cool to watch, man. Really cool to watch.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
All right.
Absolutely.
All right. I got an email. Mac, I'm a Falcon fan and I have to tell you that I was physically ill. And I agree with you. When that thing started to go, you could tell that they were going to lose.
Yep.
He said, the email says this, I'm watching it and you're hoping against hope that something's going to change and somebody's going to make a play like what happened last year in New England when Seattle had the ball on the goal line and they didn't give it to Marshawn Lynch and that kid from New England intercepted that ball. You're praying that somebody makes a play like that. And you're watching Brady thread it. And then that catch, I almost started crying. But it was a great game. And Brady's a great professional and handles himself with great class. But crushed this morning. I was texting. Hey, my family has that experience in the World Series. Two outs, bottom of the ninth inning in Shea Stadium. The Red Sox up 5-3 and nobody on. And that's game six of the World Series. Two outs and nobody on. And then I want to say that in the next five hitters, they have two strikes on four of them, and there's a total of 28 pitches fouled off with two strikes. That's how close my dad came to winning the World Series, but God was not allowing it that night. And they lost. And I'll never forget when that ball went by Bill Buckner just being – Absolutely stunned. And when you have that stuff happen, to have it happen in New York City, like, that's a bad thing. You want it to happen in Minneapolis where people are nice. They went hysterical in New York City. And it was crushing. It was absolutely crushing. Because here you think, you know, all these years, you know, my parents divorced and don't even speak to each other. And you think, well, you know what? This is awesome for him. You know, Boston's going to get a World Series. He's going to, you know, be part of it. And then, you know, it's like something blowing up in your face. And you're just like, you're so shocked that it happens. It's like, it was stupid. So painful memories. Athletics, who needs them? All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about other stuff. So my guest is none other than a Boston Red Sox fan, but he's not a New England Patriots fan. So we may have a little conversation about that. But the Gunner, with me on a Monday edition of All Marine Radio, right here on the All Warrior Radio Network.
I'm an individual member. I joined the Global South Foundation because I believe in what it can do, and I also wanted to stay tied to the community that I was part of.
The benefits for individual members of the Global South Foundation are two things. One is networking, keeping in touch with the community, developing new relationships at any stage of your career. And secondly, it helps people stay abreast and up to date on the latest issues that the SOF community should be aware of.
The Global SOF Foundation is a great partner of All Marine Radio. Find out more about them at globalsoftfoundation.org/Marines.
All I can say about militarybyowner.com is, wow, I listed my house on your website for only 2 weeks in a tough rental market, and now my house is about to get rented. I will definitely recommend you guys to everyone in the military. Thank you.
Are you located near a military base? Advertise with Military by Owner for optimum exposure to the military community. Military by Owner has experience helping military families find, sell, or rent their home near a military base for the past 15 years. MilitaryByOwner.com, proven and dependable.
A message from DAV to all returning veterans. Thank you. Thank you for doing your duty. Thank you for doing our bidding. Thank you for laying it all on the line. Thank you for stepping up and not backing down. Thank you for putting your future on hold to put our enemies on notice. Thank you for putting your buddies' lives ahead of your own. Thank you for putting yourself in harm's way. Thank you for defending our freedom, for displaying your honor, for being a hero, even though you don't want to be called one. For all this and more, DAV thanks you, and we're here to help you. Expert DAV advisors will make sure you get the health, disability, and financial benefits you were promised and earned. If you're a veteran, visit DAV.org for free help. And again, thank you.
General Sergeant Arley Ermey here with important information for veterans. At 2,600 American job centers nationwide, veteran and transitioning military personnel can find help with career counseling, resumes, and job placement. You want more information, don't you? The Department of Labor offers a variety of programs to help our military heroes find good jobs or continue their education. What are you waiting for?
We all have the ability to touch the lives of those around us. Moms, dads, neighbors, teachers, friends. These are the people who are always there to listen when we need to talk. Though their actions may not always be monumental, they are always felt. To someone going through a difficult time, a text, a call, or a visit can mean so much. Reach out to the veterans in your life today. Let them know they're not alone. One simple act can make all the difference. That's the power of one. If you're a veteran in crisis or know one who is, visit VeteransCrisisLine.net for free 24/7 confidential support. Or call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1.
You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
The soothing sounds of Blake Shelton here on a Monday edition of All Marine Radio. Mike McNamara, Mike Musselman, join us. One of the things I... Hey, Mike, could you... There's like a motorboat coming through on your phone.
There is?
Yeah. Just, could you hang up and call right back?
Yeah.
All right, do that. All right. We'll get the gunner back here, in 1 second. And we'll continue our discussion. Much discussion about the ban here. And, I want to get Mike's thoughts on it. All right, he's back. Still there a little bit. Okay. The ban. What are your thoughts on it as you see? I was talking a little bit earlier today, and one of the things I it's like, first of all, what are we even talking about? Are we talking about visas for geniuses? Are we talking about immigration? Are we talking about refugees? It seems like this whole issue is, it's like we don't even know what we're talking about when it comes up anymore. I'm just curious your thoughts on it.
Yeah, this is, I think it's, this whole ban talk is ridiculous as far as what people are trying to perceive. What we're trying to do is, you know, we're banning Muslims. We're banning people from seeking a better life and, you know, this type of issue. And I think we're missing the point here. The point is we're trying to secure America so we don't get these problems that they're having in Europe and in other places where people are freely coming in that want to threaten their way of life without any vetting. And people don't understand this. A lot of the countries that we banned from entry, we don't have a check and balance in that country. We don't have a consulate. We don't have an embassy. There's no way to vet these people. We don't have agreements. They just freely come in.
Yeah, I find that you know, if you look at headlines about this, you're quickly lost in standoff looms over travel ban, and then you have Google, Microsoft, and other high tech companies taking
Apple.
Yeah, saying, hey, you know, we're, you know, and so to me, in order to even discuss it, you have to just hit the pause button and say, hey, can we talk specifically about what we're discussing here? All right. And I, what do you think? Any lessons learned, if you were going to give advice, to the Trump administration, after, you know, after what, 10 days or so of being in office, any advice you'd give them other than his Twitter account?
Yeah. You know, I would have come out with an explanation. Hey, this is what we're doing and this is why. And explain it in a little bit more detail. I mean, just because you get it doesn't mean the whole world gets it. You know, and
right. You know what, Mike? And that's a key point, because it really, it's more important what they get maybe than what you get, because
right.
That's key. And right now it's like they don't get it.
No. I mean, it's clearly, you know, that feeble attempt that Anheuser-Busch did on their commercial last night where they showed Adolf Busch coming through America, fiction. This is fiction now. This is not how it really happened. You know, and he comes in and the first thing that's said to him is, you don't belong here. Well, you're not welcome here. And then he's trudging through the mud and he's going through all these places and da da da. And people look at that and they're like, yeah, that's crazy. You know, like, no, back up. Let's look at that. That's a fictitious, feeble attempt of one person's point of view. You know, in reality, Adolf Busch came from a very wealthy, well-to-do family. He didn't come over in steerage passage on a boat.
Right.
You know, he came over before the immigration laws were enacted at Ellis Island, and at Ellis Island they looked at your medical condition, your history, and things like that. He didn't walk across America to get to, you know, Colorado. I mean, it's just, this is that blown out of proportion that people look at and they're like, yeah, see, this is terrible. You know, we're going to cut down on immigrants. That's how my family got here. No, your family came here. Most of our families came here legally to escape persecution, you know, religious persecution, political persecution, you know, somewhere down the line, or number one, for a better life. But again, they came here legally. What we're talking about and what this ban was enacted for is the people that come here not legally. You know, how people can actually freely walk across our borders or use, you know, outdated immigration laws to actually move across the United States.
So the lack of infrastructure, these seven countries have been cited, their lack of infrastructure prohibits us from collecting the information that we would collect in terms of vetting. And that's really the issue on the ban. But I don't know anybody, to be honest with you, and Mike and I believe are the same in terms of if we got asked, would you enact a ban on Muslims? No.
No,
it's not what we believe in. It's not what our nation's been about. It's not what we fought for. So it's just a bit frustrating in terms of when you try to look at the news, what is the issue? The issue specifically is hitting the pause button until better vetting can be looked at. And so the president and the Secretary of Homeland Security, John Kelly, can look at the American people and say, hey, we're confident that we have the right steps in place so that an organization like Al-Qaeda, who certainly would exploit that to get people into the United States, because that's not going to happen. We can tell you that we have the appropriate steps there. Okay? And to me, that's reasonable. Like, I get that. But it's like, that's not what's being discussed. And which I think is pretty interesting.
Right. And instead of explaining, he's tweeting, and it comes across as arrogance.
And let me tell you, he does nothing but make it worse. Instead of sitting down and explaining, which you could easily do, and I didn't listen to his Friday night address or his thing that he's putting out on YouTube now. He could easily do that. Because he's dialing up. He's dialing up the angst and the hatred and all that, and he needs to be more of a soother. Now, let me tell you one other thing I learned about Mike over the weekend. Mike and I were having a discussion about zombie apocalypse and things like that, and he told me that you're a bit of a prepper. So tell everybody. Yep. I just heard that. I'd heard that before. Hadn't really paid any attention to it. What is a prepper? Hello? Mike? Are you there? Come in, Rangu. Hello? All right. We lost him. We lost the gunner. Just when he was going to tell us about prepping. What happened?
Yeah, that's my stupid phone.
Okay, so tell us what a prepper is.
You know, like I said before you can hear me, was the fact that it's not, they've blown it out of proportion. They made it look silly with these people and they, oh, we're waiting for a zombie apocalypse. You know, people that are preppers, they're looked upon as people that hoard guns and ammunition and, you know, that kind of thing. And to fight off the government or something. I mean, just something stupid and childish or,
right,
you know, immature. It's really just someone that's prepared for disasters. You know, so if you look at, like, Katrina, you know, where it affected people and they couldn't get water and food or they couldn't defend for themselves against people that were predatory-type behavior that were looking to, you know, look at gaining wealth out of someone else's demise. It's someone like that. That's someone that doesn't, you know, it's going to take a while for the state or the county or the federal government to come to your aid. What do you do in the meantime? You know, so you have batteries, you have flashlights, you have a radio so you can listen. If you lose, you know, you can't watch TV for, you know, what's coming next or what's going to happen or where to go for more shelter or things like that. You have food sitting there, shelf-stable food. You have water. You have, you know, light devices, flashlights, candles, because you're not going to have power. You know, so look at them more as a natural disaster than, you know, one day you look out the window and you see a bunch of zombies out the door. No, that's stupid. So a prepper is someone that's prepared for, you know, to actually, you know, make it through whatever kind of disaster, you know, if it's a hurricane or a natural disaster, where it's going to take a week or so for someone to come to your aid. What do you do in the meantime?
So a prepper is somebody who puts a premium on being self-sufficient, self-reliant.
Right.
Taking care of themselves.
Right. Right. Okay. And their family, yeah.
Because you're right. The way it's depicted is like, oh, those crazies. Right? We're talking about people in Idaho, yada, yada, yada.
Yep.
And, okay, so you're a prepper. So, give me a couple basics for preppers. I didn't realize there was as many as there are in the country. There's a lot of people that are interested in that.
Yeah. I mean, so you want to have a food source, shelf-stable food, something that you can store away and don't have to worry about expiration dates, you know. you know, so that type of thing. So food, you can usually get that at, you know, your Cabela's, your anywhere that's got camping food, dehydrated food. MREs are a great source.
Nice.
You want to have water, you know.
Right. And you got to have a lot, right?
Drinkable. Yeah, you got to have a lot. So, you know, you can buy those 5-gallon collapsible bladders, fill them with water, store them. You know, bottled water works fine, but have a lot of water. You're not taking, and this is the thing, don't worry about taking a shower or a bath. You know, you're not going to dump 100 gallons to make sure your family's clean. You know, that's the last thing you worry about. You want to worry about drinking and eating.
Okay, so let me ask you this. Can we take our, what do we do with our wastewater? We just throw it out, or can we save the wastewater, heat it up in a solar bladder, and then take a shot and then rinse off with that?
That's pretty extreme.
That's extreme?
I'm not that extreme.
You're not that extreme?
Yeah. No, I'm not that extreme.
Okay, so you think help will be coming in a relatively, so how long do you decide when I'm becoming a prepper, how long do I prep for?
2 weeks.
2 weeks.
2 weeks. I'd say 2 weeks.
All right. 2 weeks. Hold on. I've got an email for you. The penalties killed the Falcons along with that sack to take them out of field goal range. The offensive coordinator, and then in parentheses, Shanahan, should have run the ball 3 times, kicked the field goal, making it a 2-score game instead of trying to throw it and take sacks and penalties. And then in parentheses, by the way, Shanahan is probably going to your 49ers. On one of those Patriot drives, they had three defensive holding penalties, 2 on third down. Falcons couldn't keep up with the Patriot receivers, so they had to hold. The Falcon O-line couldn't keep up with the Pats D-line down the stretch. They had to hold. I'll talk to you ass clowns in a week. Headed to Idaho, ass clown defined as one whose stupidity and or ineptitude exceeds the descriptive potential of both the terms ass and clown in isolation, and in so doing demands to be referred to as the conjugate of the two. And then the second one is makes some kind of sexual reference that I won't read over the air. Signed, a field grade Marine officer. What an embarrassment. No, he didn't say he should have. He should have said retired.
Retired
and lonely.
You know what that makes him?
What?
A civilian.
You're right. That is exactly what it makes him, a civilian. Yeah. The prepper, just ignore him. He's just trying to be insulting because...
He was trying for help.
He was confused last night. He really didn't. People had to explain stuff to him during the game. It was ridiculous. All right. So 2 weeks. 2 weeks is what a prepper preps for. What else? What else can you tell me about a prepper?
You want a fire source. You want a stove. You want something that you can heat water with. You know. So a lot of the food that you have, you got to actually boil it. And then also, if you've got to gather water, you know, from another source, a stream, a lake, or something like that. You want to purify it, so you boil it before you consume it. So some type of stove, and I usually run with a like a propane type device. So I'm trying to, like, you know, just something that could boil probably about, you know, a quart of water at a time.
Okay, so give me, I'm curious about your setup. What kind of stove?
I have a few of them. So I have ones that run on a multi-fuel type.
Okay.
So they can burn diesel, gasoline, kerosene, you know, any type of flammable material, basically.
Right. All right. All right. So those are, and then how big are they? And, because I would imagine that you would, for a variety of different reasons, you'd have to have at least a big burner stove, yes? And a big pot for, to be able to handle, I'm not even sure what.
Yeah, large amounts of water.
Right. Right.
So, like I said, a quart.
A quart.
A quart, is an easy thing. You don't want to have something that's too, you know, you don't have to worry about boiling a gallon of water. You can quickly boil, you know, some of the different types of stove fast, you know, quarts of water at a time if you need it. And a quart would be ample amount to actually use for cooking or in that process. So.
Interesting. Interesting.
And then you want to have, like I said, then, you know, lighting devices, either a hand crank battery, rechargeable type battery. So you crank it up with your hand. It doesn't take batteries. It's just crank it up and then you can actually light something up, or a flashlight of some sort, you know, lantern type stuff. So, and if you do that, then you gotta, you know, have enough batteries. So store a bunch of batteries. And then have those sitting there waiting to go. Then you want to have, you know, in your house, you have plenty of blankets if it's in the winter time or something like that. Summer, because you don't have heat. You know, you got to look at how I'm going to stay warm. And most of the people have that kind of stuff. And so that coupled with everything else, and then, like I said, and then I always tell people some type of, you know, a weapon or some sort to, because people. You look at Katrina was a perfect example where there were predatory people with that kind of aspect that were going to take advantage of your situation. You knew how to defend yourself. So, you know, and there's a lot. You don't have to worry about signal meters or air panels or things like that. But a radio, you know, a battery operated radio that would listen to, emergency services, or, you know, basically what's going on. Where do I need to go? You know, those type of things. You don't have to go all out. You know, you're not living in the wilderness. You're not surviving. You're not out there killing animals to you know, feed your family.
I'm getting my prepper education. I had no idea that you would, but it, you know, to be honest with you, it certainly makes a lot of sense, especially in tornado country and hurricane country, that you would, that you would have these things available to you, and, maybe earthquake country as well. Although I don't know that it's as prevalent as it is. I think living in the part of the country you live in, Mike, where you do see, tornadoes and, you know, and they can just, you know, they can really, you know, do incredible damage to a city. I saw a tornado go through a city in North Dakota, and it's like somebody takes a lawnmower with a really shitty blade.
Yeah.
And, like, drives it.
Yep.
Yeah, drives it at about 20 feet off the ground, drives it right through the city. And it's, you know, it's like, and because the blade's shitty, you know, it doesn't cut evenly. It just, there's stuff everywhere. And you see the path of it. And I remember going, oh my God, man, it's crazy. That kind of power is crazy. And in the Midwest, you know, we're the land of the tornado, and then along the coast, the land of the hurricane. I mean, I would say those are the most frequent natural disasters that we have in the country that do big damage that would make absolute sense to be a prepper.
Right. And see, you know, people rely on like, well, I have my cell phone. Well, cell phone towers are going to be damaged.
Right.
You know, so you're not going to have any signal. You can't call anybody. You know, yeah, it's nice to have in case that possibility that is there. You also want to have, you know, and I always tell people, you always want to have like some type of signaling device, a whistle. You know, something that is audible. So if, let's say you do get stuck and your house collapses or you're trapped inside and there's people looking for you, you want to signal that you're actually there.
Right.
You know, give a signal, some type of device, that they can pick up audibly and then come to your rescue.
Wow. All right. Who knew? I had no idea Mike was a prepper.
But a responsible one. Not a
crazy one.
Yeah.
All right. All right, man. Well, then we're going to have to do a little bit of gun talk and prep talk.
Yeah.
All right. No, I will give you a call later today and we'll pick out a gun topic. We'll select a day to do it. So, All right, man. Have a good one.
We'll talk to you later.
You have it. The one and only, Michael Musselman. Hey, Mike.
Yeah.
No, we'll talk about it tomorrow.
Okay.
I talked to a guy that a buddy of ours told me to have on the radio, and we were talking, and in the middle of the conversation, I said, hey, do you know Mike Musselman? And he says to me, Corporal Musselman? I said, what? What?
At one time, yes.
He said, yeah, if it's the same guy, we were on barracks duty together. He was a corporal. I said, he had a red Camaro? He said, yes!
A blue Camaro.
He said, that's the guy. He had a Camaro in England.
Yeah.
He said, he's a good dude, man. He was funny. I said, yeah, he's not funny anymore. But anyway, we'll talk about that. All right, man. Small world. Thanks.
All right, I'll talk to you.
There you have it. Yeah. You'll hear from his name is Steve Sepke. Interesting story. You'll hear from him on Thursday. My boy Rudy turned me on to that. So thank you to him. Anyway, that'll do it. My thanks today to Justin Constantine for coming on and visiting with us. My thanks to Ken Rogers. If you have not seen Bravo, Common Men, Uncommon Valor, go to www.bravotheproject.com and buy the video. It's incredible to watch in terms of post-combat related mental health and what those guys have lived with that were at Case On and how they continue to live with it today. But it's absolutely incredible. So, and then tomorrow, if I'm not mistaken, Paul Levening, Brigadier General, 4th Marine Division, is going to join us. And then we're going to talk to the head of the Marine Corps Combat Correspondents Association. Yeah. Marine Corps Combat Correspondents Association. So we'll talk to him about their history, what they do now, and interesting stuff. Have a great afternoon. On a Monday, All Marine Radio. Out.